Next hour, so I will try to not make us behind. So I'm Brooks Davis. I'm sort of the core team liaison for toolchain stuff. I don't do all that much toolchain stuff other than maintaining the Clang ports and LLVM ports, but I sort of got roped into leading that. So I'm and cheerleading. So I'm gonna give a quick overview of where we stand with the where we stand with the toolchain today. So, quick introduction. The problem. Several years ago, the Free Software Foundation introduced the GPLv3 license. Better license in a lot of ways, actually, but a number of issues for some of our corporate customers in particular. So, patent issues and the like. So, we were faced with the problem of not being able to upgrade our toolchain anymore. We had some small upgrades we could make, but we've, I believe at this point, finished every possible upgrade to the last version of GPLv2 available for GCC, GDB, binutils.
We don't have GDB yet.
We don't? Okay. It's kind of.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to talk about today quickly is what is FreeBSD's plan, what's our status, and relevant to that, since we had a discussion of 9.0 yesterday, what's going to ship in 9, and what do we need for a GPL-free FreeBSD 10?
Sorry, I forgot about you, Robert.
That's okay. Hush you.
Nobody with that attitude.
Okay, so what is our plan? We met last year at BSDCAN. We had a group of about 20 people, including developers, vendors, the foundation, to talk about what we were doing, what things we had to replace, try to come up with a general overall plan. We'd sort of stalled for several years because, to be honest, there weren't any good options. OpenBSD started some exploration into using PCC, but we didn't really feel like a 1970s compiler was going to be a good basis for a performant operating system, and it doesn't really address all of the pieces. So we were kind of lost, and then fortunately, a year or so before last year, Apple announced the Clang project. They'd already been doing work with LLVM, but Clang provides a C front end LLVM. So the rough plan as it stands today is we have all these various pieces of toolchain that we need to replace, GCC and G++. Clang and LLVM were pretty much the obvious solution. For binutils, Joseph Koshy and Kai Wang, we're working on the ELF toolchain project to replace binutils already, and had made a fair bit of progress on that. GDB, we still don't have a good answer on GDB. In my mind, the two top contenders are probably LLDB or PathDB, but Doug also has a contender. The issue there being that we'd have to bring in a D front end to Clang, which to LLVM, which does exist, but the whole Modula 3 thing has kind of put us off that idea. One idea that I learned about. Just this week that we need to think about is we don't have an alternative to GCoV at this point for code coverage. Quick Google indicated that that Apple says, yeah, somebody should do that, was the answer to what to do for Clang. And one suggestion as a possible partial substitute is CalGrind, although it's obviously got performance issues being, you know, ValGrind. There's the other pieces are libstandard C++. When we made the plan last year, we didn't have a replacement, but the next day, Apple announced libc++, which is a pretty obvious way forward. The other option would potentially be the Apache standard libstandard C++, but libc++ looks pretty good. libgcc.a is the various math bits that you need to have for your compiler. The compiler RT project from LLVM is a replacement for that, and then libgcc.so is the other half of that, and which has some exception handling bits in it, and libonline looks like a possibility there. David?
Isn't CalGrind GPL? So we would just be trading back to
We'd probably just have to remove it. So it's something to think about. It sounds like the comment from the Apple people was they hadn't done anything on it, but that with Clang, it should be pretty easy to write that code. So what's the status? We have Clang and LLVM in head. It is, a snapshot slightly beyond the recent 2.9 release. We've typically imported the releases when they came out, but then usually found fairly quickly a feature that we wanted or an improvement that we wanted. I3D6 and AMD 64 work. They compile. They run. There are a number of people have been, pretty much running their systems with them. Compiling with Clang is kind of a pain in the butt at the moment, in that you have to set CC and CXX to do it. Something we need to fix. But as of last week, everything compiles. Boot 2 is the last big one, and we finally got the size generated size down with a combination of modifying the assembly code, as we've done with every major GCC release, and getting some improvements into Clang. We've replaced libgcc.a, and so libgcc.a in a head system is actually compiler RT. Cross builds to some are reported to work. I know you can't do a make of MIPS on i3D6 at the moment. Ordner got a compiler error yesterday. So that needs to, or some sort of error. It was a compiler assertion, but it looked like a source error.
Yeah, it's funky.
Yeah, but I wouldn't really assume it would have worked anyway. We know the MIPS backend is weak. Reportedly, i3D6 and AMD64 work.
Yeah, you can actually go a little bit farther if you also turn on Clang. You tell it to use Clang and build, it doesn't get to the point where I can't use Clang.
Okay.
But yeah, there's problems.
Yeah.
That's the short answer.
Yeah, so that's a big issue for us still at this point. LibSupC++ was not on the previous slide, but it's sort of the exception handling and whatnot bits. Press release isn't out, but I can say that there's been negotiation and there is going to be a BSD licensed one shortly. The code's already written, we're just getting it relicensed. And we're waiting for the FreeBSD Foundation and NetBSD Foundation to figure out a press release and all that process. Most of the bin utils programs have been rewritten. They're in the SourceForge project for the Elf Toolchain project. They are not currently in base, so we need to prod them along on that. But there's two, with the most, has two big caveats. One is the assembler. The good news is Clang and LLVM have an integrated assembler, and it's not clear that user bin AS is good for anything. Everything that wants to call an assembler directly wants to call NASM or YASM or the like in practice. So we may, in fact, just remove it. And if you need it, you'll have to pull something in. That won't happen in 9. But that may be the route for the assembler. The big gap, though, is a linker. Best estimate we've got, 6 months full time. We got to find somebody and got to find a way to make that happen. So what about 9? Clang and Clang++ will be installed alongside GCC and G++. CC and C++ in user bin will be GCC and G++, respectively. We talked yesterday about the possibility of doing the actual world and actually kernel builds with Clang in the system to get more exposure to the generated code. We haven't reached a complete conclusion on that, but that's fairly practical to do today. That would, of course, only be on i386 and AMD64. Although for embedded platforms, it's certainly conceivable we could change that default partway through the stream, since most people compile their own anyway. And we also have work in progress on an external toolchain. So on external toolchain support, Warner's reported model is there'll be a variable he'll set to either GCC, Clang, or external. So it'll be pretty easy to build with something else. We know a lot of our vendors need the external toolchain support irrespective of the needs in this case. The thing that motivates us in terms of the toolchain switch is we obviously have architectures like IA64 that are not going to have LLVM support. The project deleted it and said it's not coming back. If the industry changes radically, that might change. But at this point, not likely. Yeah, so external toolchain support is important for that, but it's also important for I've got this weird-ass MIPS board, and the vendor took GCC and applied a hammer to it until it built code that more or less worked, and probably doesn't build for anything else at that point. So you need that toolchain support regardless. So final slide here, or no, not final slide, close. What do we need to get to a GPL-free FreeBSD 10? That's the big question. I'm not going to address the random other GPL bits like Groff. We're on the way to getting that removed with Mandoc and the like. But so what do we need? Big unknown here is the linker. We've got to find a way to get a linker written. Sort of unfortunate that a new one was written about 5 years ago, which was first released as a GPL v3 product. It's definitely doable. Mostly we need to find a person. We need libc++. We need somebody to pick that up and run with it. To get that to work, we know so far that there are some features in libc that we are missing, in particular some of the features around locales in the most recent POSIX drafts, or most recent POSIX standards, rather. We need the exception handling bits in libcc_s.so. It's not entirely clear to me that some of that isn't in the libsup++. It's just not my area. And when you go and look up what these libraries do, the answers are hopelessly vague, even on the GCC lists. So that needs to be handled. We need a debugger. This is a case similar, I think, to libc++, where the Linux community is also interested in getting these tools working just to give more diversity. So there are people working on getting LLDB working on Linux. So a lot of the work they're doing will apply to us. Not all of it, but certainly a lot of it. And I did actually see completely randomly while I was working on these slides last night some posts with, this stuff gets me a lot farther in building LLDB on FreeBSD, posted to the LLVM list. So some people are working on it, which is good. I think in these cases, we sort of need to get somebody to start working and do some gap analysis and figure out what the pieces we need to fill in are. Not insurmountable, but definitely some work to be done there. The biggest step we need before we can really throw the switch on the compiler and change CC and C++ is we need the ability to switch the ports compiler from the system compiler. I don't think it's a massive amount of effort, but it's a substantial amount of effort. There's a probably fairly straightforward and constrained set of makefile changes that you have to apply, and then you need to do experimental build runs and find all the stupid ports that don't do the right thing and don't obey CC and C++. We know they're out there. We just don't know how many there are. So that's going to be entertaining. Probably the answer there is you'll link GCC and CC and Clang to bin false and then set CC appropriately. Or some similar test strategy. In practice, I don't know that either of these is completely gating, but I think to really say this is our system compiler, we need ARM and MIPS support for at least a couple common reference architectures. ARM should be mostly there. There are, these things run ARM and build with Clang. So that's not a, so code gen should be all right. MIPS is weaker, but we've got, there have been some recent commits, and I know there's some people at Cambridge who have done a bunch of work recently, so that's going to help. I think getting at least some key reference platforms going is going to be important. And then something actually people should be working on now. Yes?
Do you know what the status is on file we see in Spark 64?
Spark 64 is kind of languishing. PowerPC, I believe what's actually missing on PowerPC at this point is vargs.
That should be a doable task to bring it up.
Yeah, PowerPC and PowerPC 64, I gather, should be pretty straightforward. Apple once cared, so the code shouldn't be too hopelessly out of date. It's mostly that it sounds like the biggest issue at this point is that their ABI differs from ours. And something that people could work on, we obviously need this to really have it be our production toolkit, is we need the warnings fixed in the base so we can turn WAIR back on. And that's something we could be doing right now. There are some issues we need to deal with either in terms of which arguments we set where to handle the cases of LLVM saying unused argument because of things that are only in GCC and may or may not matter. So we need to fix that one way or another, and we also need to fix just the fact that Clang is in some cases has bogus errors, in a lot of cases has legitimate errors or legitimate warnings about things. So that's really what we need to do. So we really, to make this, I think it is quite possible that we could get this done in 10. There's a boatload of work there. Overall, there's a couple of man years of work on that list, but I think it's all achievable. It's not like one person has to do it all. So to make it happen, though, we really need your help. And so one place to look now, if you want to start poking around with Clang in the base, is the Building FreeBSD with Clang page on the wiki. Next things on the list, I would say, are, port to libc++, libllvb, write a linker, give money to the foundation who's been helping us get people together to work on this stuff. Hopefully, has worked to get us libsup C++, is, I believe, working to get us a linker. We just help out there. So I'm happy to take any questions you might have in the 3 minutes we've got.
That's the ports. We've got three ports, GCC, Clang, LLVM, GCC 4, LLVM, Clang, and Clang. What are your plans for those? And they all seem to conflict, but yet they're all...
No.
The conflicts are set between them.
No, so what there is, or what there should be, is there is LLVM, which is the latest release version of LLVM. There's Clang, which is the latest release version of Clang. There's LLVM GCC4, which will be deleted from the tree when the next version of LLVM is released, because there will be no further releases and it's dead anyway. There is then also LLVM devel and Clang devel, which are a randomly updated, usually more recent snapshot. At the moment, they're behind, but so. I am putting the changes that I know about in, which are the format string changes. We're trying to keep the rest of it down. Rui?
So, just stated for the user line interface, it would be very, very cool if we had our own type slider, because user line interface really needs. So, basically, when our ad is corporate, I didn't change it new URL. I now have a hack on it, so when the program loads, it's going to reach a single program. If we add our own linker, we could basically get the send doc section. Correct?
Okay.
That would speed up user line interface sort of time for any program. So the other thing that I mentioned is about enabling picking up the warnings. So I think it's a good idea to fix them, but there are a couple of them that we probably want something like cflags.clang and cflags.gcc, because Clang right now is going to fail out if you specify a place of every name registered. That would error. So you also need to put more in the make files to remove that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Fixing the warnings in the kernel would be actually better right now, because if you're using Clang, you should have no warnings at all in the kernel before committing stuff. So that's one. I think you mentioned that it was a last priority, right?
Well, it's just where it ended up on the slide. I would actually say it's something people should work on now in the lead up to 9, because frankly, it's going to improve code quality. A lot of those warnings are legitimate errors. So. Ed?
Do you know, Brooks, if there's any sort of linker story from Apple, or is whatever's going on there not at all
relevant? Well, it's essentially not relevant because they're Mako instead of Elf. I mean, I suppose it's remotely possible that some of the solver bits would be relevant if you factored them out, but it doesn't seem particularly credible.
Is the
Sorry?
Is the Western link region open source?
Don't believe so. It's at least not in LLVM. I mean, yeah.
I mean, but probably anything that would be there would be 1% or 5% or something, what we care about anyway. So.
That would be my guess. You know, I did get some murmuring from someone on the LLVM team that if only they could get away with it, they would switch to ELF. you know, I don't think that's a particularly practical reality unless you write the world's most awful runtime linker.
So, slightly off topic, but not really off topic. If you want to get familiar with Clay and compile third-party software on it, does it work on previous D7 and 8 for that purpose if you install the port?
Yes. I usually do my port upgrade builds on my port test builds on either a 7 or 8 test box. The fast boxes I have at work. I am in theory out of time, so whoever is supposed to talk next. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. So I'm Baptiste Roussin. I'm here to speak about a project we started about a year ago to replace actual package install tools with a new one, which is called PackageNG for the moment. So after studying a lot of things to improve the situation with the package tools, we have decided to do big changes. So our tool come with a new backend, which is based on SQLite. We have tested first some flat files to achieve this. We have tested Berkeley DB, we have tested constant database, but only SQLite could do what we need. We also come with a new package format to be able to get all the metadata and to be able to have better management on the files and the scripts. We also bring a new repository format, which means that the tool can use repository format. That repository has it usually is the case on other Unixes. The new design for the package is based on a new library, which can be used for high-level tools. Maybe we can imagine tools like PackageKit frontend or stuff like that. And we come with a frontend, which is a single binary called PKG. So you should be able to use PackageNG along with package tools without problem. Why do we choose SQLite? First, it's because it's really fast to do complex requests on the package database installed. With the current flat file system, it's really hard to do complex requests like asking the package tool to show us the reverse dependency of package and to look for files to know which package bring that files. It's also reliable, so it's really hard to corrupt the database So we can use it. It's full features. We use it, lots of features that SQLite can give us to be sure the database is always usable. We use triggers, we use constant integrity, we use a lot of things that allow us to be sure of the state of the database without having to rewrite a lot of C code. SQLite is also really easy to integrate in the tool. We don't have to import it in base. We can just use a single C file and a single H file along with our code. It's the way it's recommended by upstream to use it, and it allows to just compile the features we need and to add the optimization we need for the tool. And data integrity, I already speak about that. The new package format is still a tar file like it's currently, but there are a lot of changes in that package. First, all the files are with full pass, not just a relative pass as it was before, because installing package in a custom prefix, which is different from the prefix given when the package was built, is just broken features. It won't work most of the time. We come with a new plus manifest, which will replace the plus content file and the plus comment file and most of the files that were shipped with the old package format. This manifest is still in Pelis format for readability and because it's quite easy to parse. It brings a lot of new keywords to allow to get at least all the metadata that the ports can have. It comes with new scripts, the upgrade script, to allow packages to do safely upgrades, which can't be done with the current package system. We also support new pre and post scripts, which means before you have pre-install, now you have install script, which you launch with an argument, which was install or deinstall, and then it will know what would be executed. Now you can just ship the pre-install if you have nothing else than a pre-install stuff to do. We have deprecated some ugly things from the ports, which are the Arabas DRM. Now the new format is able to know there is a directory that needs to be removed, so you don't have to specify it in the plist of the port. The new format also supports having empty directories. Currently, if you want to have a port which install empty directories, you have to add an add exec mkdir at the end of the installation. But it's not really clean. We prefer the port to really keep a track of all the files, directories, and everything it has done within the package itself. We have new metadata, as I said earlier. We have the option metadata. We can know a package has been built with this option or this other option without having to change the name of the package. We support many formats. The default one is TXZ, but you can choose to, don't know why, but if you want to use TBZ or TGZ or a single tar, just depend on the arguments you use. The new library contains everything to deal with the local database. We don't want the front end to directly access to the database. We want everything that uses the packages to use the library so that we are sure they are doing the thing the right way. All features needed if you want to query about information on the that package database are in the library. All the things you want, if you want to install new package, are in the library. If you want to do upgrade, if you want to do to deal with a remote repository, are in the library. So it should be really easy to write new tools if you find the front end does not fit your needs. Just write a new tool using the library. You will do the things the right way, and you can have the front end you want. We try to provide mostly high-level function to avoid front ends to just do the bad things, calling two function in the bad way. The library is also here to hide the database. Currently, we use SQLite. Maybe tomorrow or in 10 years, we want to change. We just change it in the library. The front end won't see the difference. And while coding the library and the front end, we try to not reinvent the wheel. So we use all the good library we can find in the base, which means we use libarchive, libsbuf, libfetch, OpenSSL, and many more. The new repository format, if you already have played with tools like APT or Yum on Linux, it's basically the same kind of thing. So you put all your package in a folder. We don't mind about the hierarchy of the folder. In the folder, you can create special folder to fit your needs to make sure this package are together. It uses a SQLite database, which is generated with the front end by analyzing all the packages in this folder. It is signed with an RSA key, and it doesn't need to have a port tree to fetch any metadata, as it's actually done with index file. So you just have packages, no port tree, you can build the repository and then use it on other computers or servers. Yeah? It's RSA signature.
RSA with what?
With OpenSSL.
No, with SHA-1, SHA-256.
With SHA 256.
Is it exchangeable?
Yeah. Currently, it's not. It's hard coded because it's an alpha code, but we can make it changeable. I won't detail everything the new front-end does. Most of the subcomments are something we can find in every modern package system. So you can choose, you can know what they do. Special one are register. Register is only for the port tree. It's to say, okay, I have all the binary installed. Then I just register the package inside the database without trying to find a binary anywhere. But it can also support installing package from a fake root. So we bring the ability to build package in a fake root, and only if we are sure the package or the port is okay, it can be installed in local base. All the other is the usual one. I started this project after having tried to and succeed to manage the packaging tool from NetBSD, but because there are too much difference on what is done in package source and in ports, there were glitches here and there, so I decided to restart it. And when I started the project, Julien, who is here, joined me, and we both created this new tool with the help of another guy who did a lot of contribution when we were hacking to determine what will be the final solution we will have. And you can find the current state of PackageNG on GitHub. You have your URL.
The comment with NetBSD, are you saying what you've done follows them and will be parity with their changes?
No.
Or we're totally...
Totally. We started from scratch.
And different feature set, different approach?
Different approach, different feature set. It's completely different now. Yeah?
If I install packages, say, a handful, and I'm done with that, and I look at under var DB packages, I get, 100 plus directories.
Yeah.
For the most part, I therefore don't even know what is needed, how the dependencies are.
Yeah.
But I find myself currently still need to worry about it, because if I remove a package I installed, I also want to get rid of all those dependencies that I don't need. Is there a recursive remove implemented so that I only have to worry about sort of the top level ones that I install, and if I remove it, everything else that has been added has also been removed?
It's not currently done, but it's all the design has been done to do that. But it's not an automatic remove. First, we ask the user if the user wants the remove to be done. Yeah.
As part of this effort, will port master still kind of be the way of doing upgrades, or will there be PKG space upgrade? So it's much more native.
PKG NG only deals with binary packages. So to upgrade the sources, we will need to patch Portmaster, but that shouldn't be too much difficult.
No, my question is, Portmaster works rather different than the other base PKG. Would you be having the more unified approach, or still this external tool to the base package tools?
My guess is that it will stay the way it is now. We are open, so if someone wants to provide something else or a better way to do, feel free. Yeah? If you want the package themselves unsigned, only the repository is signed, and if you want to sign it yourself, you can. You just have to have your own RSA key and. I don't understand the question. You want to download the package which is not in a repository? No, individual packages unsigned and won't be signed, because we provide a full set of packages in the repository if the repository is signed, and we have the checksums of the package concerned by the repository. We think it's enough. Who do we trust? The FreeBSD project. Yeah, I think the goal is to do that with a security officer, as it's done for, I don't know, Podsnap, for example, or as it's done for the FreeBSD upgrade. Okay. So next one.
I have another question.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
It's probably related to the first one I had. If I install a package and it installs various dependent packages, but something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Is there a way to make that atomic so that you get what you want or nothing new?
This is how it works. I mean, if something wrong, it's rolling back everything, and then you're exactly at the state you wanted to.
Okay, so the state you had
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the PKG adds something. It will check if everything would go OK. And if it's the case, only at that time it will install everything, okay, except bugs. Yeah?
One question that recently came up was the topic of multiple repos.
Yeah.
Similar to what Yum does and App does and even Emerge does as well. Please bear with me. So we have a number of packages that we roll in-house at Ironport that we have to mirror for various reasons. And we may have set custom options for them. And we may have a bunch of packages that we honestly don't care what the options are. So like just for developers, for instance, that we can potentially grab a free guest developer. One of the questions that came up from the developer is, or rather a feature request is having multiple repositories or depots, so that way it has a list of favored mirrors to go to, similar to other Linux Apache tools. So that way, it would pick up our mirror first. Then, if it failed to find that package, it would go hunt down the package at freebsd.org or somewhere else.
The thing is, we want...
Right now, it's kind of controlled with the hack with our package and all that stuff.
Yeah, the thing is, we wanted to do, for the first version of PackageNG, something really simple. And dealing with multi-repository is not simple at all, because you have to be sure all your package set is consistent and works together. And we can provide a full set of package which we are sure they work together, they can build together, there is no problem of, I don't know, options activated or not in a shared library or stuff like that. And if we allow a second repository to come, maybe the repository is not consistent with the first one and will install packages which have conflicts not resolvable because it's from two repositories. So it needs more thinking about that. And if we activate that, we'll have a lot of users saying, OK, I activated 10 repositories and everything is fucked up on my system. This is a bug of PackageNG. I'm not sure it's a bug of PackageNG. But you can still install package by hand, not from a repository. Or the other thing is, if you have a vendor with a lot of package, you just take the package you want from the repository, so the official repository, add your own, recreate the repository, and then all your computers will be able to use both in a single repository.
Yeah. Putting it out saying that this is a must have. But as for number two, what you brought up, where some dependencies could be incomplete, or if I download a series of packages and say, freebsd.org has a bunch of knobs enabled or disabled that we need or don't need, I would actually just blame whoever produced the original packages for being silly enough not to run packages.
Yeah.
You, so I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a bug of package MD. I would just say it's,
you know, but other users will. I'm pretty sure of that. Okay, so next one. Okay.
Yeah. That's enough for my PDF later.
Okay. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can clip it onto your line.
Yeah. It's all right here, I guess.
You can just clip it onto here. That'd be easier.
Mm. Yeah.
In your pocket.
Yep. So, I see myself like this. So, last talk of today about the Chromium web browser. The one from Google and ourselves.
Is it a full screen?
Oh, it's not full screen. It was about full enough for me. That's better. When it came out, some efforts to port it. One was from Florent to me. After some legal challenges, it was which Justin talked about last year. And that's what it finally arrived in the ports on last October. And which was by some other guy. And because he had a particular scheme to port it, he ported an old version and then kept the up-to-date version private for and you could subscribe to it. So if you paid him, then he would give you the new version. And yeah, okay, that was kind of okay, but then some security issues were discovered, which meant that, and he didn't want to document them into XML. And after some emotional discussions on IRC, the maintainership was transferred to me. And after a while, some other people joined in, and then the FreeBSD Chromium group was formed. Then we had a vulnerable browser in the ports, with nothing else, and then after a while, we got Chromium 9 kind of working. But we were just a bit too late to put it in a port. Chromium 10 and 11, which is the current version, we managed to port them with some outside contributors. And so they seem to be working quite well. Now, there was some issue that you could only run it on current, but there was some mistake from yours truly about the threading that went wrong, but that was fixed. And because Chromium was never really designed for BSDs, for Windows, which is more than 90% of the user base, some Linux, some macOS, and then what is that BSD thing? So now we are stuck with 190 patches of about 350 kilobytes. Which isn't that bad, because the tarball, if you extract it, is around 700 megabytes. And So we can pull the patches upstream, but first you have to sign an agreement that they're really yours and blah, blah. And then they have to be reviewed. But by the time they are reviewed, because then a new version of Chromium is already out, because they release a new version about every 6 weeks. So, which means that by mid-June we should have Chromium 12. So yeah, then you're not really sure if the patches still make sense if it takes like 2 weeks, for example, to review them. So, but it seems to be manageable currently. The keeping up with the patches just in our own, in the port stream. And yes, when a new version is released, so Chromium 12, for example, then Chromium 11 and is dropped from upstream support. Because it's so big and has a lot of contributed software. And it's V8, WebKit, image decoders, for example. They all might have vulnerabilities. And So because also, of course, for the security vulnerabilities which are discovered then, they just can't keep up with all the releases they bring out themselves. So. And that 700 megabytes, which I mentioned before, actually comes from, because the Chromium really knows which desktop you run, if you're in GNOME or KDE, and it adapts for those particular desktops to get all the features. For example, a proxy configuration. And there are also a lot of operating system specific code, which sometimes they seem to reinvent the wheel a bit. For some reason. So when you go to the patches, it's a lot of them are just like, oh yeah, on FreeBSD you do this, which in a lot of cases is the same as you would do on Linux or on macOS. So one of these examples is to sandbox the processes, the render. And it's done, you would do it different on Windows than Linux, so. And of course, we have about to have our own sandboxing, which is Capsicum. Robert in a box talked about it already. So, they have Capsicum in 9. And Robert and some other guys, I think Ben Norrie, also made a proof of concept implementation of a FreeBSD with Capsicum on it. And then a Chromium adapted to use Capsicum. But the tree hasn't been updated for a while, so now it's against an ancient version of Chromium, which you don't want to run for security reasons. Unless you... But yeah, it would be nice to see how it can be merged back or integrated somehow. Because then you really have per website sandboxing of per tab. Yeah, and of course, because Chrome is from Google, and Google likes to know everything about us, there seems to be some spy code. But some guys were really concerned about it, and they made a fork, Iron project. So yeah, it's Chromium seems to figure out the stuff about your router. Well, it didn't work on FreeBSD anyway, we just left it out. And some other things, for example, the synchronization feature. So if you have a computer at home and at work, and they both have Chromium, they can synchronize your bookmarks. Or you actually do that by storing them somewhere in your Google account. But that's off by default. The updater also keeps track of when. That might only be locally, but not sure about it. When you last updated the browser, but since we have it in a port, it's irrelevant. And there might be some other things.
So you're saying that geolocational synchronization is not enabled on the previous D port? Do they work?
Synchronization works, but it's switch off by default, so you have to, in the preferences.
Turn it on, right?
Yeah.
And if you turn it on, it works?
Yeah, I have it on myself. So. Yeah. But, yeah. And might be some other things that I don't know about either. The Iron project actually lists some. So, even made it in time. We have the development repository, which we used to, or Chromium and a Chromium development version. At the Qt repository and that's the Chromium website itself. And there are some small things left to be done. For example, if you what doesn't work is that if you it can't determine if it's the default browser. Because every browser wants to be the default browser. So there are some. So if you're bored and you have some tickets listed over there to work on. So that was it. If you have any questions.
How does this compare to other platforms other than the Geo?
The Geo? HTML5 works, so you can, for example, on YouTube, you can choose between Flash and HTML5, and they both work.
And the latest Flash plugins or whatever Flash solution works
on this? Yeah, it works with the Linux Flash plugin, with the same thing as you use on Firefox. I guess everyone wants a beer. Okay. Well, then. Well, then let's loop. And it's probably time to have a beer.